Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Well, I retired at the first of the year, and so after 13 years of living in a very old house with a yard that really has needed help for 13 years, I finally have the time to garden, so I've been going nuts.
That's Julia Carr, a volunteer at the Generations Gardening Together event at the Monroe County Public Library. Several seniors were helping children plant herbs and make seed bombs. We were there collecting folks' gardening stories. From Harvest Public Media, Congress eyes cuts to SNAP benefits as it debates the farm bill. Then, when Chef Dan Marquis isn't in the kitchen at Quay in Chicago, he's growing food on his family farm. And we go foraging for cattails. Lots in store today. Our food news headlines today come from Anna Coogan. Welcome.
Hey, Annie. The Senate voted to pass the farm bill Monday evening with a bipartisan vote of 66 to 27. The bill includes cuts to SNAP benefits, commonly called food stamps. The House is expected to make much deeper cuts to SNAP, $20 billion over 10 years versus the Senate's proposed $4.1 billion. It also proposes eliminating $5 billion in subsidies given to farmers, whether they farm or not. Crop insurance will become the fallback for these farmers instead, a program heavily subsidized by the government. The bill maintains significant subsidies for corn, soybeans, wheat, cotton, sugar, and other major U.S. crops. It adds subsidies for peanut and rice farmers, something not seen in last year's version of the bill. The House has said it will work on its version of the farm bill this month. On the heels of concerns over the quality of its produce, Walmart has committed to getting food on its shelves sooner by buying more of its fruits and vegetables directly from growers. It plans to purchase 80% of produce directly from local growers by 2015. The retail giant has prided itself on expanding its local produce stock from 4 to 11% in 3 years. Walmart defines local as in-state, but not everyone's happy. Walmart makes contracts with farmers a year in advance, which doesn't allow room for uncertainties small farms face, like unusual weather patterns. Some farms have decided not to deal with the company, stating it's in their best interests to work with organizations who pay more. Customers, investors, and company executives have also recently expressed worries over languishing produce and spotty inventories. And soda was back in the news this week. A recent study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition found that children were consuming less sugar in the form of sugary drinks in 2010 as compared to 2000. The demographic boasting the biggest reduction in sugary beverage consumption was teenagers, who drank 84 calories less per day. 1 year ago, New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg proposed a ban on big sodas in the city. But the New York State Supreme Court ruled Bloomberg had overstepped his executive powers by skipping the city council and going straight to the Board of Health. An appeals court heard the case Tuesday and will decide whether or not to reinstate the ban. Get the latest food news all week by finding us on Facebook and Twitter. Search for Earth Eats.
That's the news for the week, Anna Coogan. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Annie.
$7 million Americans are enrolled in the SNAP program, or food stamps, including 7% of Hoosiers. SNAP is the biggest spending item in the farm bill, and the program has a big bullseye on it as Congress debates new legislation. As Grant Gerlach reports for Harvest Public Media, the economic considerations go beyond who receives SNAP benefits to how and where the money is spent.
Walking through the farmer's market with April Segura, it's obvious she's a regular.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
How are you?
Segura looks over tables of lettuce and herbs at the Old Cheney Road Farmer's Market in Lincoln, Nebraska. She's 31 and a single stay-at-home mother of three. Two big shopping bags hang from one arm. The other supports her one-year-old son, Jeriel, riding in a sling on her chest. Segura is a SNAP recipient and a local food fanatic.
I love asparagus season, and it's probably about to be over. So, and I didn't get any last week because we were in a hurry, and we barely made it here. So,
Segura depends on around $500 each month from SNAP to help cover her food bills. As much as she can, she uses that money at the farmer's market. Today, she found cabbage and tomatillo to plant in the garden and bright green asparagus for a snack.
And is it four for the bunch? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
It used to be common for markets to take food stamps, but when paper stamps were replaced by plastic debit cards, not many markets invested in card readers. In recent years, though, there's been a rebound. In 2008, only 750 local farms and markets across the country accepted SNAP. Last year, it was more than 3,000. That means Segura can swipe her card and buy food that otherwise would be hard to afford.
I wouldn't want to just get crap food. Like, you know, for me and my kids, I realize we need to be eating healthy, and we try to do as organic as we can and local as we can.
Customers like Segura pushed SNAP spending at farms and markets to more than $16 million in 2012. But that's hardly a drop in the bucket when you consider government spending on SNAP reached $78 billion last year. It's doubled since the recession. The current debate in Congress is not whether to cut that number, but by how much. The farm bill in the Democrat-controlled Senate would trim an estimated $4 billion over 10 years. For many Republicans, like Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma, that's not enough.
Why would they call this a farm bill if 80% of it is talking about the food stamp program? I can't think of anyone who could rationally say that this program of food stamps could justify being increased by 100% in a period of 4 years.
Meanwhile, a different version of the farm bill in the Republican-controlled House of Representatives would cut SNAP by $20 billion. Many Democrats, including Congressman Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, argue that's unnecessary because SNAP spending would fall on its own.
When the economy gets better and people go back to work, the numbers decline. And as this economy improves, the CBO says this, you'll see fewer and fewer people on SNAP.
Supporters also say SNAP spending is a form of economic stimulus. According to USDA, each dollar of SNAP produces $1.79 in economic activity. Most of that money does not go to farmers markets. The vast majority of SNAP dollars enter the economy through large supermarkets and superstores. Megan Jackson, manager of the market on Old Cheney Road, acknowledges a dollar may buy you more at the grocery store, but it's divided differently.
By the end, the farmer sees 19 cents of that dollar. Here, the farmer sees 99 cents of that dollar.
Jackson says small growers don't receive the same government support as commodity grain farmers. For them, SNAP is like an indirect subsidy.
This is one avenue where that support is direct.
And that's the beauty of being able to come to the market, because, you know, I know this person here and there, and you can come to the market and you can support everyone that you know that you want to support.
This summer, Congress will argue over how much food assistance the government can afford. In the meantime, April Segura, like a growing number of SNAP users, plans to spend as much as she can afford at the farmers market. I'm Grant Gerlach, Harvest Public Media.
Read and listen to more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. Farmers work long days, and chefs can easily clock 80 hours a week. Imagine being a chef who farms. That's the reality for Daniel Marquez. He's the executive chef at Quay in Chicago, and he farms 20 acres in Sheffield, Illinois. This self-proclaimed workaholic can be awfully hard to get in touch with.
Hello?
Hi, is this Chef Dan?
Yes.
Hi, this is Annie Corrigan from Earth Eats. How are you?
Good. How are you? Sorry. We're running a tractor down here. We're working on the farm. It was going off my pocket and I couldn't get to it fast enough.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, you sound a little out of breath. We were supposed to chat on the phone a week earlier, but he had to spend all of his time and energy doing some damage control on the farm, apparently. Thanks to some heavy rains earlier this month, the creek that splits the property in half flooded all of the fields.
And most of the time, it goes down pretty quick, but this last week down here, we've had, it's just been raining and raining and raining.
Well, can you talk about how this year, with all the rain that we've gotten in the Midwest, has screwed up your planting?
Well, you know, it's a lot of it is timing. You know, we started earlier this year. We're basically having the exact opposite type of weather as last year. Last year, I think we got an inch of rain in a whole month. This year, we're getting the total excess of the amount of rain that we had last year. So it's hard to work the fields when the ground is so wet. It's just more mud than anything else. So now it's drying up enough now to where we can really get in there and work. So we're trying to take full advantage of it.
He comes by farming honestly. Mill Road Farm has been in his family for 4 generations. Since everything on this organic farm is done by hand, he recruits the help of some of his restaurant workers on their days off to come down and pick weeds. This group effort seems to be paying off. This is the second year he's grown food to serve in the restaurant, and he's anticipating a tenfold increase in production over last year.
The learning curve was just so great. You know, we learned so much last year to utilize, you know, what we were trying to grow, rotation, making sure that we're not overtaxing the soil and things like that too. So we're just trying to be very careful and just, you know, do it the right way.
Well, gosh, you know, as you said earlier, last year is so completely different from this year weather-wise. I wonder if the things you learned last year are, like, totally not applicable to what you're doing this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while to figure out, you know, when the weather is like this, what's going to grow best. And last year, we spent probably half our time just watering and irrigation and things like setting that all up. And this year, we haven't had to water anything. So that's been nice, but now you have to weed all the time.
Mm-hmm. As a chef, put on your chef hat for a second. When you're picking stuff in the garden, does that affect what you then cook in the kitchen?
I think it just gives you, you know, when you do a seed to plate, so growing it yourself, you take that much more pride in it. You know, it's almost like more of a burden because when somebody, you know, if they burn it or they overcook it or whatever, you know, it's just, it makes me that much more crazy about, you know, my product.
So this is a bit more of a big picture type question. So this is a very romantic thing you're doing. You're growing your own food on your farm, and then you're cooking it in a very fancy restaurant. But, okay, so the large distribution companies are there for a reason, right? It's one-stop shopping. They deliver. They can get you the volume mm-hmm. that you need. So I just want you to respond to this idea that, you know, growing your own food, doing what you're doing, just really in a lot of ways doesn't make any sense.
Well, to some people it wouldn't, but to me it makes perfect sense. I would say half the things that I'm growing, I could never get on a regular basis from one of my purveyors. Yes, they have. You can get heirloom tomatoes, but I can assure you that the heirloom tomatoes that they're getting are nothing like the ones that we grow here. Because the ones that I'm growing, one day, you know, we pick it one day and it goes into the restaurant the next day. I mean, just for me, it just seems perfectly logical.
Chef Daniel Marquis is the executive chef at Quay in Chicago. He also grows food on Mill Road Farm in Sheffield, Illinois. Coming up, the many uses for cattails.
Probably around July, this will be green, and you can broil it or grill it and eat it like corn on the cob. The pollen would be on this part, and you pull that off and use that for your muffins and pancakes.
Chef Daniel Orr is firing up the boat to go foraging in the lake behind his house. Come back to hear even more ways to use parts of the cattail in your cooking.
Slanted rays and colored days, stark blue horizons, naked limbs and wheat bins, hazy afternoon. Voicing, rejoicing, the wine cups do bring. Pussy willows, cattails, soft winds and roses.
Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all 3 locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Each week, we speak with authors of everything from cookbooks to food history books. This week, we chatted with Ed Jackson and Becky Sue Epstein, authors of The American Lighthouse Cookbook.
Well, when you were the lighthouse keeper, you know, you were, like, stuck at the lighthouse, so you had to get your food, whatever you could get, right out either from the ocean or in your backyard. They're the ultimate local bore.
This book features recipes and stories from 47 lighthouses, from Massachusetts to Puerto Rico to Hawaii. And there's so much more than seafood in this cookbook. Here's 1 minute with Becky Sue Epstein and Ed Jackson, where they describe some of the more memorable dishes in the book.
And there's one called chicken, peanut, and sweet potato stew. Who would have thought of it? But really, we took into account the local populations that lived around this Biloxi lighthouse. And they had their menu for Sunday family supper would be braised green stems, cheddar cheese, grits and scallions, chicken, peanut, and sweet potato stew, and maybe sweet potato pie. You know, this is a place where that's what they had to eat. Just because you lived in a lighthouse didn't mean that you ate fish every single day.
I actually like the this one up there's up around Minnesota. Leek and parsnip stew, sauteed quail. It has braised Brussels sprouts, some wild rice. Then you finish off with a walleye pike. That's the main course for the food. And then you have an apple pudding cake. And an interesting thing about the apple pudding cake, it's up in Minnesota. It has Honeycrisp apples, which were developed by the University of Minnesota, especially for the growing climate up in Minnesota.
People love lighthouses. They're iconic. They're like American heroes. They rise up out of the dark.
Well, a friend of mine calls lighthouses like the cathedrals of America.
Thanks so much.
Have a good
bye-bye.
One. Thanks. Bye. Read more about the American Lighthouse Cookbook by Becky Sue Epstein and Ed Jackson on our website, eartheats.org. Thanks to some beautiful summer weather, green thumbs across south central Indiana are getting outside and working in their gardens. A recent event at the Monroe County Public Library brought together seasoned gardeners with some pint-sized wannabes. James Gray and I attended the Generations Gardening Together event and collected folks' gardening and food stories.
What are you making?
It's a seed bomb.
What's a seed bomb?
I'm going to plant it.
They're wildflower seeds, and she's going to take it home and dry it out, and then she'll go to where there's a bare spot and just bomb it with the seed bomb.
You like gardening on your own?
I'm a bit of an addict, yes.
Do you remember your first memories of gardening way back?
When I was really little, it was sort of a bad memory. My mother had filled a flower box with purple colza seeds, and she was out there planting, you know, the ladylike planting with the little gloves, and planted her little seeds, and it looked like so much fun, so I decided I'd join in. So after she finished, I went and picked up the little seeds and put them in there. Only my seeds were tiny little pieces of rock. And I filled it with little pea gravel. And my mother came out and was quite annoyed because she thought, well, these aren't going to come up. So she tipped the window box over and refilled it and started over again. And that summer, Our whole side yard was filled with purple colas. People came up, would stop and tell her how gorgeous it was, and she didn't want to tell them. It was because she got mad and dumped the box out and started over again.
I thought we got to make them.
We get to plant them, and then they turned into flowers.
Yeah.
What kind of flowers do they make?
Oh, they're all kinds of wild flowers. Do you know any?
My second daughter, who is now six, was born with sensory processing disorder. And she spent the first 3 years with lots of symptoms, screaming fits, and her senses were overwhelmed all the time, very similar to autism. We embarked on changing our diet radically and going back to eating organic, whole foods, all made at home, nothing processed. And my daughter, within 3 weeks, was a different person. And now she's been on the diet almost 2 years, and nobody can even tell that she has this disorder. Huh, this is Jenny right here. Can you say hi?
Hi.
I do this at home, except that I don't put seeds on the outside. I just put mud on it, and then I cover it in, like, leaves and stuff.
Which one of these herbs do you want to plant? We've got oregano. That's the pizza herb. We got basil, which goes in spaghetti sauce and just about everything else. We have dill, which makes pickles. Do you like dill pickles?
No.
Well, I retired at the first of the year. And so after 13 years of living in a very old house with a yard that really has needed help for 13 years, I finally have the time to garden. So I've been going nuts, and I thought, this is right up my alley.
Then why is it important for kids to garden at such a young age?
I was thinking about that the other day. I was digging through the compost, and there are a lot of worms in there. And, of course, as soon as I was done and moved on, the robins immediately showed up. And I thought, you know, the robins eat the worms. The worms have helped the earth already. Then the robins poop them out. It's like this little circle of life. I think it's really important for kids to see that, because I think they're more resilient even than adults are about stuff like that. So if you start early, it kind of moves into all your different aspects of life.
Thanks to Charlotte Holly, Jacqueline Lovings, Julia Carr, and all the kids who participated in Generations Gardening Together at the Monroe County Public Library. That was part of Creative Aging Festival in Bloomington throughout the month of May. Read and listen to more gardening and food stories on the Earth Eats website, eartheats.org. Not going to go tubing? Oh, bring it back. Oh. We're getting the boat ready for our first recipe today. That's right, this foraging adventure is happening on the water, specifically on Harrison Lake, just outside Columbus, Indiana. Ladies and gentlemen, he's a chef, he's an author, he's a radio personality, and he's a boat driver. Chef Daniel Orr, he does it all.
So come on, get on in.
So we're not just going for a joyride, we're going to go look for cattails. Why are we looking for cattails, Chef?
Well, cattails are they call it the supermarket of the marsh. And they've got lots of different edible parts to them that the Native Americans enjoyed. And so you can eat, during different parts of the year, you can eat different parts of the cattail. Right now, in early June, we'll be looking for just the shoots, and they'll be almost like hearts of palm, or, you know, kind of a crunchy salad-like vegetable. And then later, as they start to shoot off their characteristic cat tail, then there'll be two parts. You have the male and the female part of the cat tail. The female part is the the part that stays on turns brown that they use in designer decorator stores for flower arrangements and things. And the male part is the pollen. It is one of my favorite parts. You can make different breads, muffins, pancakes out of the pollen by incorporating that into different batters. And then you can even pull the root, and the Native Americans made cakes out of the flour that they would make from the dried roots. So it really is the supermarket of the marsh.
We're approaching, I guess it looks like weeds again, but just weeds in the water to me. But you see this as something that we can eat.
Absolutely. You see that last year's female parts still kind of waving in the wind, almost cottony looking. And there's one point where you can actually use those as kind of a corn on the cob. See how this is? Probably around July. This will be green, and you can broil it or grill it and eat it like corn on the cob. And so that's a really good... Then the pollen would be on this part, and you pull that off and use that for your muffins and pancakes. And then we'll try to pull up some little spears.
We're alongside this little marshy area, and literally he's down in the water pulling it up from the root.
See, this is the root, and this is what you would dry and grind up as a flower. You can see a young root coming off here. And then inside here, this is the part that I was telling you is kind of like hearts of palm.
I'm surprised that I'm eating that, and it tastes really delicious, really tender.
Isn't it tender and moist and kind of like sweet corn almost?
What would you do with that?
Chop it up and put it in salads. Just eat it raw. Again, you want to make sure that anytime you're eating cattails, that they're coming from a non-polluted, non-treated lake or pond. So it's always best to know. Don't just pull them up on the side of a cornfield that may have been treated with some types of pesticides. Make sure that you're always eating your wild foods from a clean, natural area.
Find a recipe for cattail pollen muffins on our website to change up your breakfast ritual in an especially local and seasonal way. There are plenty of other recipes waiting for you there as well, like a vegan strawberry rhubarb pie from our newest contributor, Natalie Ray Good. Find it at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Ahabon Binder, Anna Coogan, James Gray, Liz Leslie, Chef Dan Marquis, Chef Daniel Orr, and the entire team at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, Therapeutic Massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. We always love your company. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Annie Corrigan.